From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome to Cairo Nights. I am your host, Jake Skorheim. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. We just love hanging out with you guys. We love seeing you. We love getting your text messages. We love the fact that you made us a part of your night. We really do appreciate it. Thank you so much. And do you love us too?
No, God! No, God, please, no! 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 No!
All right, that's fine. We're still going to do a great show, so I hope you enjoy it. I am still, if you guys have any suggestions, please let me know, because to see, we're getting to crunch time with the baby. As you guys might know, I have mentioned it more than once or twice on the show. My wife and I, we are very, very excited about the new baby that's coming. We have three boys. We are about to have our fourth boy in just a little under 2 months, so the clock is ticking down quickly, and we are still disagree. I would say arguing, but it's not arguing. It's not even aggressively disagreeing. We're just disagreeing right now on baby names. We're not sure what to name this baby. And the reason it's so tough is because we have had three boys already. That was not our plan originally. I don't think anybody plans on having three boys. You just kind of get what you get. And we love them. They're great. We love the boys. We can't get enough of them. But you start strong with names and you get really excited. You're like, oh man, we got this family member that we just love. We just love this great grandpa or something. Or we think, oh, what a cool name that would be if we had a kid. And then you have your first kid and you get to name your kid that amazing name that you've been holding on to maybe since you were like 10 years old or 15 or whatever it was you first started thinking about having kids. And then you have your second kid, still very exciting. It's really great names. There's a ton of great names. You're not going to be able to name your first kid everything that you love. And then you have your third name, and you're like, all right, well, there's still a lot of great names out there. We're now on our fourth son, and there's only so many boys' names out there. And what I don't want to do is, like, I don't want to just give in. I could give in. I could just say, all right, sweetie, my wife has specific ideas. I have specific ideas, and if I just gave in to her or if she just gave in to me, I feel like we're taking the path of least resistance, which is not what I want to do. That's how Kyles are born, which is also my middle name, by the way. So I don't want that to happen. I want us to come up with something that we both hear and we love, because that's going to be the kid's name for the rest of their life, unless they get a wild hair at some point, decide to change their name, which is possible. I know there's people out there who do that. But, I want to start them off on the right path. So I'm looking for a good name. I've gotten a lot of suggestions. My buddy James here at work, James Lynch, is a great reporter here, super funny guy. He's really stuck on D'Artagnan. Every time I see him, he goes, hey, when's D'Artagnan coming? I'm like, James, it's not going to be D'Artagnan. But there are a lot of good suggestions out there. So feel free to hit me up if you have any good ones. And speaking of baby, boy, is my wife nesting hard right now. You guys know what nesting is? Yes, basically, as I understand it, as it's been explained to me, it's basically just my wife has an intense list of things that have to get done before the baby is born. Because if the baby gets born, then the list, I guess, disappears and those things don't get done. I think it's just something to think about so you're not thinking about birthing a baby. I don't know. Nesting. It's a real thing. And this morning, she tries to send me off to go get some deck furniture. I don't know why we need new deck furniture. We have more deck furniture than we know what to do with. We're literally storing it under our deck. We don't have enough for the space that we have. But she saw some new chairs. She goes, oh, I just love this patio stuff. It's on offer up. I need you to go look at it on your way to work. And I was like, well, we have, like, literally, we have half of this stuff. And she goes, no, I don't need that half. I just want these two chairs right here to complete the set. And I said, wait a minute, why do we need just two? What am I going to do with the rest of the set? And she goes, well, just get rid of it. I was like, what do you mean just get rid of it? She goes, well, this stuff's free. So just pick it up, get the two chairs that I want, and then get rid of the rest. And I'm like, well, you're not just like, I can't just dump it on the side of the road. This is not 1955. I have to take it somewhere. So it's not really free. I'm just like kind of picking up somebody else's trash. That's what these people are doing. They're just getting rid of it. So why am I picking it up? Why am I getting rid of it? Like, I'm literally just the middleman here. I'm picking up their furniture for free, and then I'm paying to dump it, which I have not done many times, by the way. My wife sees something that she really loves. It's free. She goes, great, it's free. So we pick it up. I don't love it. Let's go take it to the dump. Minimum price of the dump is like $26. So I'm paying to dump other people's junk. So I put my foot down. I said, listen, sweetie, we got to talk about nesting. We got to talk about this thing. Because what I think is happening is we're starting to, like, this is now a catch-all for just things that you want done. You're just, you know, obviously everyone understands you're very excited. Everyone's excited about the baby, but we can't just, like, we can't just put our energy into whatever we're looking at the moment. We got to think about, like, be a little bit strategic. We got to think about this a little bit. And so I came up with a rule, which I thought was a really good rule, actually, because, I don't want it to just be a catch-all for, like, sending me off to do stuff. So I said, you nest as much as you want inside the house. This is your domain. Anything you have in here, I mean, obviously, it's like, you know, happy wife, happy life. So anything you want me to do inside the house, you want me to paint a room? Done. I'm going to paint the room. I'm at least going to put it on a list, and I'll get to it when I get to it. But I'm going to paint a room. You want me to you want to put stuff in storage or get baby stuff out of storage from our previous kids? Done. Happy to do it. But no nesting outside. That can't be a thing. If you have, like, yard work ideas or things that you want me to do outside in the yard, I'm happy to approach those with you as somebody who also wants to make sure we have a nice yard. But we cannot let this fall under the umbrella of nesting. That feels like it's abusing privileges. And I don't think that's a good thing. And I don't think baby would want it. I don't think baby Kyle would want us his poor dad picking up chairs that he doesn't need just to take the dump, just because his mom is kind of going a little bit crazy right now. All right, let's get to some real stuff. SeaTac yesterday, 46 arrested. There were a pro-Palestinian protest that took place in front of SeaTac Airport. They blocked the road for 3 hours. The expressway to the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport was blocked. You can read all about this on MyNorthwest.com if you are interested, or I will just tell you about it right now. They blocked the road for about 3 hours, just between about 3 and 6, when I was hosting the John Curley and Sherry Elliker show. Subsequently, 46 people have been arrested and sent to SCORE for processing, according to spokesperson for the Port of Seattle, Perry Cooper. However, Cooper said more people may be arrested as an investigation continues. Fortunately for travelers, the road is back open and traffic is flowing through. Here's the thing, though, when you think about it, 3 hours at SeaTac International Airport, you could not get there by car. We were doing news updates the entire time that I was hosting the John Curley and Sherry Elliker show, as I did today. So I hope you guys checked in and heard it. You could not get there. And what they were advising, they were saying, you guys, best of luck. Like, if you're in your car and you can get out of your car and you could somehow make your way over to a Link light rail station, that's the only way in or out, because those are elevated. So the protesters have to be really, really ambitious to get up there. And those trains don't stop. So I don't think they're going to lay down in front of those. That was the only way into SeaTac, is if you took the Link light rail. But that's a real hassle. If you weren't planning on taking the train into SeaTac and you were planning on being in a car, you were in an Uber, you were in a taxi, or maybe you had a good friend dropping you off, and then you're just sitting in that traffic for 3 hours, can you imagine how stressful that would have been? My heart goes out. Anybody who's listening right now who was supposed to be at the airport yesterday and missed a flight, God bless you. I hope you have some good karma coming your way, because that is no fun. That is an awful thing. I would have lost my mind, especially if I was traveling with my kids. Like, you're already losing your mind if you're doing anything with your kids for a long time in a car or flying, like just anything out of the normal routine can at times be trying if you're a parent. And so to think about these poor parents who are sitting there for 3 hours, or like an old person, think about that. Like somebody who's kind of getting on in years, old people and young people, or just normal age people like my age. Like midlife person who's, you know, 40, but, you know, who looks late 20s, maybe. I don't know if late 20s. Let's say just a person who looks young. I could not sit in a car for 3 hours without having to go to the bathroom. I'd have to pee somewhere, and I'd have to get out on the side of the road, and I would be just fuming mad. Number one, because I'm probably going to miss my flight if I'm stuck in, you know, traffic for 3 hours. Because I'm not getting to the airport 7 hours ahead of time. You just get to the airport just long enough that you need to, like just early enough that you need to make it through security. And then two, if I'm stuck at the airport and I'm waiting, and I'm stuck in traffic and I'm waiting and I have to get outside and pee, I'd be nervous. There's a lot of people there. There's no place to pee. Where are you going to go? This was crazy for hours. Police arrived almost immediately. We were watching footage of this. We saw plenty of people were taking pictures on Twitter. They're putting them up on X. Police were there. Why didn't they arrest them? Why did it take them 3 hours to arrest these people? And this happened everywhere. San Francisco, they blocked the Golden Gate Bridge. This happened outside of Chicago's O'Hare Airport. blocking, blocking people from making it into the airport. There was pictures of people crossing medians by the freeway with luggage, towing luggage behind them, walking across the wet grass, just trying to make it in. That is horrible. Whatever you're protesting, you should not be allowed to protest on roads. I thought we had laws against that. We just talked about this, like, what was this, like a month or two ago? When all those climate protesters, was it climate? I don't even remember what it was now. All those protesters were blocking I-5. Remember, it was blocking I-5, heading north, and they blocked it for like 6 hours. Because what they do is they pull their cars up, they coordinate all this. They pull their cars up, and they all stop simultaneously on the freeway. Number one, bad thing. You can't get around these cars, whatever. They blocked every lane of traffic. It's very effective. It really works. I think it's illegal. It should be illegal. I think they're trying to put in more laws about this right now so they can take swifter action. I don't blame the police necessarily. I blame politicians who have made it difficult to remove protesters. It's not like this everywhere. I have video or audio I'm about to play you from Florida. When you do this in Florida, Florida doesn't mess around. They have laws on the books that let police say, hey, you know what? You can't block the road. You're done. We're taking you out. Not like taking them out in a bad way, but like literally like they just lifted them up and moved them like tiny baby children off the road. And then they dealt with them off to the side. They did not make this all play out in the middle of the road, blocking traffic for hours. So I'm going to play you some audio from that in just a second. And we have the law that passed in Florida that they should just adopt everywhere so that they don't have to be, you know, causing all this ruckus. But what I just don't understand why. Okay, so here's what happened. I'll get back to my story. Here's what they did. They pull their cars up. They block the road. They turn their cars off. Then they get out. I imagine they're like borrowing their mom and dad's cars or something. And then they lay down on the road and they put their arms, they link their arms. Oftentimes, it's like a daisy chain type of a thing. They lock their arms inside. They reach inside PVC pipe, which is cut to a length that, you know, they could reach inside and like kind of be connected, either holding hands or oftentimes they're also locking themselves up with handcuffs inside the PVC pipe. So it's not super easy for the cops to just go in and, you know, simultaneously move however many bodies are, you know, connected via this PVC pipe, which is then tough to access. It's not like they can just like cut the locks. They'd have to actually saw through the PVC pipe and they got to be careful they don't saw one of their arms off. Although if you're laying down in the middle of a highway, you're putting your arm in a PVC pipe. If somebody cuts it off, isn't that your fault? Maybe not. I don't know. We got a lot of text messages yesterday. People were not happy about this. I'm not advocating that they cut anyone's arms off. What I am advocating is that they get these people off the road quickly. This is how it sounded in Florida. And I'm not kidding you. This is how quickly it happened. Police arrived on the scene. They were blocking a road in Florida. Police arrived on the scene. And what happened? Almost immediately, the police just walked out. They waited until there was enough cops. Like, I get this too. Like, one of the reasons that they talked about on I-5 last time that this happened, like a month or so ago, one of the reasons that the state patrol said they didn't go in and act immediately is they said, well, we need to make sure that we have enough officers to deal with as many protesters as there are because they don't know what the protesters are going to do. They could get violent. They could get crazy. Obviously, these people, feel passionate. And so they could just lose their minds and do something crazy. You don't want to put police in harm's way. That's not what I'm saying. But what you need to do is be able to have teams in place so they can go out there and quickly remove these people. There were plenty of cops there yesterday. Looks like there was like double the cops in many of these sites. Like at many of these places where the protesters were blocking the roads, there might have been 100 protesters, but there was 200 cops or a lot of police presence. So go in, everybody grab a leg and just start pulling. That's what I want to see. This is what happened in Florida. Police showed up. Enough cops got there so they felt like they could, you know, whatever happened, they were going to be able to handle the situation. And then they walked down to the middle of the road and they took care of business. You can't really, you can't hear that super great. You can hear the protesters chanting. You can hear the police removing people. Here's why Florida can do this. So Florida passed a law called the Combating Violence, Disorder, and Looting and Law Enforcement Protection Act. This was championed by Governor Ron DeSantis, who's phenomenally popular in Florida. He says, some of the crimes that may occur during a riot are explicitly listed in the new legislation are willfully obstructing the free, convenient, and normal use of a public street, highway, or road by impeding, hindering, stifling, retarding, or restraining traffic or passage by standing on or remaining in the street, highway, or road, endangering the safe movement of vehicles or pedestrians. I think everybody should adopt that and use that in our, and I think we should definitely adopt that in Washington State. Because in Florida, now that they have that law in the books, the second those protesters are laying down the road, this is not a free speech act anymore. This is them impeding the, what is this here? Hindering, impeding, stifling, restraining traffic or passage by standing or remaining in the street, highway, or road, endangering the safe movement of vehicles or pedestrians. Cut and dry. Simple. Get them out of the road. If they want to protest, go to a mall. But when somebody's on the road, you're trying to get to an airport, you're trying to see a loved one, you're trying to get home, you're trying to catch a flight, that is money and time. Oftentimes, it's life, too. There's a lot of organ donation that goes through Seattle, through SeaTac. You see these people flying on planes with little, little like igloo coolers that has a liver in it. They're trying to save somebody's life. What happens if they miss a flight? Does a person just doesn't get their liver because you're making a protest? They need to figure this out, Washington State. They need to figure it out quick. All right, really fast. We only have a couple minutes left. I want to play this for you really quick. Let's see here. There's a TikTok video. I don't know if you guys are interested in this at all. This is kind of a, just a silly story. A TikTok video from a London dentist goes viral after revealing the three surprising times you should never brush your teeth. These are also times when you just assume you should absolutely be brushing your teeth. Sherry made a good point when we were talking about this earlier. Should we be taking dentist lessons, dentistry tips from the English, from Great Britain, who are not historically known to have the most amazing teeth? Think Austin Powers. I don't know if we should be taking advice from them, but here's a London dentist. Take it for what it's worth.
Here are three occasions when you should never brush your teeth. You should never brush after you've just vomited. This is because the contents of the stomach are extremely acidic and the mouth is in a very acidic state. So if you brush straight after, you're basically wearing away your enamel. You should never brush straight after breakfast. This is because when you've just eaten, the mouth is in a very acidic state. So if you brush your teeth, you're rubbing that acid on the tooth, which is a mineral, and it can wear it down.
A lot of acid stuff. Basically, it sounds like acid's bad for your teeth, which I kind of could have guessed.
Don't brush your teeth after you've just had sweets. Wait at least 60 minutes. This is because when you've just eaten sweets, the mouth has digested it into an acid, and that acid is going to get rubbed on the teeth and destroy the enamel. So wait at least 60 minutes before you brush your teeth.
Ah, okay. Well, that makes sense. All right. We have a lot of stuff coming up on the show tonight. Some good stuff. Next, I'm going to play you. There's a new Lennon-McCartney song. Can you guys believe it? Although it's not Paul McCartney and John Lennon. Their sons have actually teamed up. They've released a new song together. I'm going to play you that song, and I want to see what your opinion of this song is. It's, we'll see. I'll play it for you when we get back. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, before the break, I was had a clever little tease there, a new Lennon-McCartney song. Get it? Like John Lennon, Paul McCartney. Obviously, that would be tough to do because John Lennon is no longer with us. Hasn't been for quite some time. Paul McCartney still is, and he is a, I was going to say national treasure, but he's not ours. He's a national treasure in the UK. He is an international treasure. I saw him perform 10 years ago, I think, maybe sometime around there, 10 years ago. What a phenomenal performance that was. That was so amazing. I went with, I'm so happy that I did it. Like, tickets were a little steep, but my wife and I, we took my parents and my in-laws. So we have the six of us, you know, my in-laws and my parents, obviously, they grew up listening to the Beatles. They were such huge, massive fans. And for my wife and I, you know, the Beatles and Paul McCartney, they have been part of our lives. The music has been the backdrop of our lives. Like I've never been alive when the Beatles weren't a giant influence, a giant thing. So we went and saw Paul McCartney when he came to Seattle. I think it was 2014. I could be wrong about that. It might have been 2013 or 12, 10-ish years ago. The guy comes out And we're going to get to why we're talking about his Paul McCartney's son and John Lennon's son. They're doing music together. They're like the second coming of the Beatles. I don't know if you would say minus the talent. I certainly wouldn't say that. I think they have tremendous talent, much more than I do. But are they the Beatles? No, I mean, there's only one Beatles. Anyway, I'll get to that in a second. Paul McCartney comes to town, and this guy just knocks it out of the park. It was 3 hours this guy was on stage. And at the time, he was probably like late 60s, early 70s maybe. 3 hours on stage, plays all the hits. That's a real easy thing to do when you're Paul McCartney, because every song that you play has done very well. Even his new stuff is pretty good. But thankfully, he just mostly played the hits. That was amazing. And then he comes out and he does like a half hour encore. It's just like, what a treasure of a memory that was with my parents and my wife's parents and my wife there. Just like, oh, beautiful summer night. Paul McCartney just couldn't have been better. Anyway, the guy's a superstar, obviously. The Beatles, they're infamous. They're the Beatles. You don't even need to say their last name. You know their names. George, Ringo, Paul, John, everyone knows them. They also have kids. Paul McCartney has a son. His name is James McCartney. John Lennon has a son. His name is Sean Ono Lennon. And James McCartney and Sean Ono Lennon make music together. They've actually come together to release a new song. Obviously, they're following in the footsteps of their very, very famous fathers. I don't know if you could be the sons of a more famous musical duo in history. I don't know. That's not just hyperbole. I don't know if you can name another musical duo, certainly in the last 500 years, whose sons have had a bigger mountain to climb. And probably what they've done is they just said, listen, like, we're never going to be the Beatles. It's not going to happen. We can't. There was only one Beatles. What we can do is try to make some good music together, and we can try, this is for people who might like it. So they have released a song. I'm going to play it for you here. It's called Primrose Hill. This is their song. It's a very Beatles-sounding name right off the bat. I have not heard this. I'm going to hear this with you for the first time. The song is called Primrose Hill, which sounds like it's, Strawberry Lane. It's like it's a very, very Beatles-y sounding song. I imagine that's on purpose. Here it is for the very first time, McCartney and Lennon's new song, Primrose Hill.
We laid on Primrose Hill, didn't know it still. An overcast sultry day, I didn't know what to do.
I'm gonna pause it really fast. You can definitely hear, there's an essence there. There is a sound specifically because they probably look alike and they have similar bone structure. And he grew up, I sound like my dad. And, so James McCartney does sound a little bit like Paul McCartney. It's pretty good. Sean Ono Lennon, I'm sure, sounds a lot like John Lennon. Our kids look and sound a lot like us. So that's working for them for sure.
I didn't know what to say. We lay there forever, forgot everything. Kiss beneath the stars.
You know what? Like, this is just a small chunk. The song's going to be released, so we have that about a minute there to play for you. I don't think it's that bad. I mean, I think it's way better than I could do. I mean, I'm not a musician. I can't read music, and I don't know anything about music. But I will say that I know what I like, and I think that's pretty good. If you had just played that song for me and you had not told me that was James McCartney or Sean Ono Lennon, if you had just played the song, I'm trying to think, like, how would I have responded to the song? Am I giving it extra credit because this is Paul McCartney and John Lennon's sons? No, I don't think I am. I think the song is genuinely stands on its own merit. It sounds nice. I think it sounds peaceful and nice. Is it something I would drive around in my car and listen to? Probably not. But I think it sounds pretty nice. So for that, it's pretty good. I would say good. Good job, James and Sean Ono Lennon. Again, it's really tough because their dad is Paul McCartney and John Lennon. And Paul McCartney and John Lennon, they wrote songs like this. Hey, Jude. I take it back. I don't think Primrose Hill. I mean, no, I can't take it back. I still like Primrose Hill. But is it a Hey Jude? Obviously not. You know something crazy about Paul McCartney? I just heard this the other day on the Fly in the Wall podcast. So, I don't know. They could have been lying to me and I just don't know it. But they're massive Beatles fans. And Dana Carvey was saying, this is a lot of names. Dana Carvey was saying that Paul McCartney can't read music. He's like, he just doesn't read music. He just is a natural, he's a phenom. He just figured it out how to play it on his own. He just doesn't read music. Isn't that amazing? You cannot read music and you still can make songs like this. Stick around, right back here on Cairo Nights.
You're listening to Cairo Nights with Jake Skorheim.
Welcome back to the show. All right, I want to play this audio for you really fast. I thought it was kind of funny. Donald Trump, he is in the middle of a trial right now, one of his many trials that he's going through right now. And not only is he going through trials, literally, but he's also going through trials in his life because he's also running for president. That's a season of life that has a lot of trials and tribulations in it. It's very difficult to run for president, obviously. It is made more difficult when you are also having many trials that you are having to sit through. He can be, you know, and he's not a young man anymore. He's 77 years old. And so sitting there, listening in these many trials can get very tiring. Apparently Donald Trump fell asleep during one of these trials just yesterday. And so the news was having a heyday with it. They were talking about it over on CNN. Jon Stewart, who hosts a funny show on Comedy Central, we pull clips from it from time to time. He was commenting on Trump falling asleep in his trial. I thought this was kind of funny. So here it is.
After years of anticipation, the first criminal trial of a former president has begun. And by all accounts, it is absolutely riveting.
40 minutes ago, you wrote an observation that I was very surprised. Trump appears to be sleeping. His head keeps dropping down and his mouth goes slack. Tell us about that.
Well, Jake, he appeared to be asleep.
That's what sleeping is.
Hey, Jake. What part of head down, eyes closed, drool coming out of his mouth do you not f-ing get over here? He's snoring. He's doing the Hong Shu. He's doing the me, 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 me. There's a piece of paper going up and down and up and down in his mouth. He's asleep. Imagine committing so many crimes, you get bored at your own trial. Move on to the good stuff.
That's now, funny. It's a funny line. I like that. He's a funny guy. He's a funny guy. I'm here to amuse you. No, he's a funny guy. All right. This was another thing that I saw that I found. I'm not sure how to feel about this. I know that my immediate reaction to this is like what you might describe as kind of an intense eye roll. You might have a different reaction. Maybe you love Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. Maybe you are massive royal fans, or maybe you don't like the royals. And so the fact that they kind of left the royal family makes you root for them. And you love Prince Harry, or I guess he's no longer a prince. Is he still a prince? He's just Harry, right? Now he's just Harry Sussex. So I don't know if you're a massive fan of Harry Sussex and his wife, Meghan Sussex, formerly Meghan Markle, but they have another product line. I feel like they're always coming out with stuff. Like they had a big giant deal over at Netflix. So she joins the royal family. Everyone goes, oh, this is amazing. It's the first non-royal to marry into that family, or non-English person to marry into that family forever. And it did not go well. The family and Meghan, there was a lot of stuff. I don't know the ins and outs because I'm not a total like royal watcher. But all I know is they now live in Montecito, which is a long way from jolly old England. And they're no longer connected to the royal family, and they don't have any official capacity with them anymore. And there's just like, it seems like they've had a big falling out. So they come back to America and they start making their life now here in America. And I do not like bemoan anybody figuring out how to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and make life work. I am doing it. Everyone does it. You do what you can. You hustle. You do what you can. But it's easier to hustle when you used to be a royal, I guess, is my point. And so I don't have like am I rooting for them? Probably not a ton. Am I rooting against them? No, I'm not rooting against them. I don't like have any ill will towards these people. But am I thinking that the sun rises and sets with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle? No, I'm not that person either. So Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, they come back. They signed some massive deal. I heard it was like 9 figures with Netflix to do some giant Netflix thing. They end up doing a docuseries, which was kind of interesting. My wife and I watched it. I found it very interesting. They did a bunch of interviews with Oprah. They did all this stuff. And then they had, I think they had like a $20 million, I could be wrong about that price, but like millions and millions of dollars in podcasting deals, which did not go great for them, didn't go great with podcast stuff either. And so I just feel like they're trying a lot of things. And again, I don't bemoan people who try things. I like people who try things. So I don't understand why whenever I see a story about Prince Harry, I just kind of like my eyes roll a little bit. I guess, I don't know. That's just my reaction. Maybe, you know what it is? I think it's some sort of a deep-seated insecurity because I know that my wife used to love Prince Harry, Prince William and Prince Harry. She like grew up at the perfect time where I think she even had posters of them on her wall when she was a little girl. And so, you know, and she was a huge royal fan. You know, she was a big fan of the Titanic. I don't know why that relates, but you know, it was built in over there, right? I guess that relates somehow. So maybe it's just like maybe jealousy. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, they have a new business. It's called American Riviera Orchard. And I don't know, is this Meghan Markle's business or is this also, I think Prince Harry's involved with this as well. Anyway, they sell jams. They sell, like, this is what they're doing now. They sell jams. So they have released their first strawberry jam. They sent it out to a bunch of influencers. People seem really excited about this. And they've posted pictures of the jams. It's not in a huge batch. It's got, you know, like little calligraphy written letters on the front says like, you know, number 17 of 50. So if they're only making 50 jars of this jam, I don't know how much money they're planning on bringing in. But if this is just a hobby that they really love doing, that they're trying to turn like a little side business, like maybe let's say you're in LA and you go to one of their, you know, beautiful markets in LA, like outdoor markets. If I saw a booth with Prince Harry and Meghan Markle sitting there selling strawberry jam, American Riviera Orchard jam, would I buy it? Yeah, I think I would. So I guess I've come full circle. Now I'm rooting for them. I hope they do well, and I hope they make a lot of money on this jam. All right, we got a lot more coming up in the show. Stick around. We're going to be right back here on Cairo Nights.